Hi, this is Sybil. This panel was difficult to record because of the topic. In Mormon culture and in Mormon doctrine, it seems that women are primarily told to be mothers and to bear children. And so those who choose not to are left in a very strange space inside Mormonism. And it's very difficult for us to find a way to frame a discussion and find ways to talk about why we've chosen not to have children, our fears about motherhood, and our experiences in a church that sees our worth in relation to whether we have children. As we recorded this panel, we found ourselves becoming increasingly nervous that we would be offending simply by trying to express our own experiences. So please know that this is not our intention. We did not set out to try to offend anyone. We were simply trying to express our own experience, and we're sure that there are others out there who also share this experience, and we would like them to feel that they are not alone. So please, as you listen to this panel, go in with an open mind and try to hear us for what we're saying, instead of feeling that we are somehow judging those who have children or being insensitive to those who are infertile and cannot have children, or whatever the case may be. We are not speaking to those experiences. We are speaking to our experience of choosing to be childless. So without further ado, let's go listen to us talk about being childless by choice, a topic which is not very often dealt with in Mormonism. Welcome back to Daughters of Mormonism for part two of our panel discussion about being childless by choice with Sybil, Amy, and Shelby.
The next place that I kind of want to talk about is if we did choose motherhood, does that mean, like you're saying, Amy, with I don't know if that would satisfy me to just be a mother and the just being the problematic moment. Does that so if we choose motherhood, does that mean we choose to be at home, we choose to I don't know, that we choose to become this stay-at-home mom idea because, you know, you're not supposed to work outside the home despite the hip PR spots that are currently coming out with the church. And, you know, your children are going to be so much better off if they have you staying at home with them, which is up for some question as well. What would it mean if we did choose motherhood? Because it seems like culturally, choosing motherhood means choosing to bear many children and to stay at home and to dedicate yourself to them and to pretty much put any other desires or passions that you have on hold. Am I overstating that or?
I had this argument on a blog several years ago with some other women who were mothers, and they felt that I was overstating it when I said things like that. But I think, you know, and they wanted to say that that's not really the message that you get at church. And but you know, and I don't know what wards they grew up in and what their young women's leaders were like, but that was definitely the message I got. And I'm not going to let anyone tell me that's not. It was definitely like, well. For example, there was this one woman in my ward who I respected a lot. She was very intelligent, and she was a lawyer, and I think she was a partner in her own firm. And she had two beautiful little boys, and she had built her dream home in our ward and everything. And her husband was a construction, he owned his own construction company, so they had built this beautiful dream home. And she took so much crap in Relief Society about working outside of the home, and a lot of times it was very passive aggressive. You know, it would be said not directly to her face, but in Relief Society, and she just, you know, you can't prove that that's directed at you, and maybe it's not, but you can't also help but feel like it's directed at you, I think, when it's, you know, something that resonates. And she actually ended up like moving out of her dream house, moving out of the ward. That was a big eye opener for me when I was, I think I was about 18, just finishing my senior year of high school when that happened. And I was like, wow, I don't think I can do this. I don't think I could be in the church and have a career because I don't think I could deal with that constant judgment. I'd love to be the sort of person who says I don't care what other people think about me, but it's hard.
Yeah, and like you were saying, you know, if they're saying things in church about women who have careers, well, they're not talking about you specifically. Well, but you're still going to receive the message, just like, you know, women who are choosing not to have children. Well, as soon as they preface it with that, you know, like you feel the pointing of the statement right at you, you know?
Right.
So can we redefine what it would mean if we were to choose motherhood? Because we've talked about the what ifs of perhaps someday we would choose children, because right now we are childless by choice. We may someday have children by choice. What would it mean if, like, do we have any role models for the type of woman and mother we would like to be?
Struggle with this a lot. I feel like my mother was amazing, and I have a ton of respect for her and the way that she parented us. And I would love to emulate her in any way possible, but I do sort of feel like for her, she was completely content and happy staying home. And I think part of that was because she had a lot of interests and talents that she could pursue from within the home. She was very artistic and is very artistic. And so she would take painting classes and do photography and some other things that she could do. But my interests don't happen to be things that one can pursue inside the home. So I don't have that option. And I think that's why, for me, being a stay-at-home mom would not be fulfilling enough. A lot of things, I read a lot of mommy blogs, and I'm always impressed and sort of envious of those skills that people have, and they seem to enjoy it, but I'm not good at those sorts of things, and I don't enjoy them. So I do feel like I don't really have any role models of working mothers, either from my family and also from in my field. There are some scientist mothers that I know, but it doesn't feel like it's really appropriate to ask them questions about their home life and how they juggle.
What about you, Shelby?
My own mother, I feel like it was a very good role model for me. She was never really that, you know, stereotypical stay-at-home mom. She worked most of my, you know, childhood. She did have a job, and I feel like she felt a lot of guilt about that. And I was very much aware of the tensions in the ward as a young woman between the working mothers and the non-working mothers. And I heard some discussion about that as I was young, but, you know, my mother always worked, and I never felt this neglect and this, you know, like I was missing anything. You know, have you guys, any of you ever read Spencer Kimball's, Faith Precedes the Miracle? It describes this, you know, poor children whose mother's not home, and it's just very offensive. And I never felt that, though. I felt like my mother worked, and I was very much attended to, and she was there for me. And, you know, so I've never really worried that much about it. And you know, I think it's a shame if she felt guilty, because I certainly don't hold it against her or feel neglected, or I didn't get, you know, a fair shake because my mom didn't make homemade bread. I didn't really care about that. And so I think it'll work. And I'm very fortunate because I have a husband who, you know, is going to be nurturing as well. And we will share the parenting and the nurturing. It's not going to all be on me as the mother. And that's something that I demand in my relationship is, you know, equality and to be an egalitarian marriage. So, you know, and I feel like I've met lots of non-LDS mothers who work and their kids are happy. You know, I had a boyfriend in high school whose mother was quite successful. And, you know, her kids were not into drugs. Her kids behaved well. They got good grades. I mean, it's like I wanted to kind of go back to talking about, you know, the women who do choose to be stay-at-home mothers and making it clear that, you know, I really respect those women. And I, you know, I have a lot of family and friends who do choose that. But to me, I think it should be about choice. It should be about doing what makes you happy, and not this one size fits all, you know, this one role for all women. I just wish that there was more of a sense of we're all individuals. We all have different needs, wants, desires, acceptance, and openness for variety and diversity in Mormon women.
Hear, hear. Like it's bringing to mind when I was a missionary, there was this family that was in one of my areas, and they were a husband and wife who were lawyers, and they ran their law firm together. And I remember asking her one time while we were preparing dinner, because we were going to eat with them, and I said, "So how does it work? Because this is a different family setup." And she said, "Oh, it works really well. You know, we both do this and we both do that, and you know, we both help out at home. It's not like it's all my job here. It's his job too, and the kids have their different things that they do." And I said, "Well, what do they do after school?" And she said, "Oh, well, some days he's home for him, and some days I'm home for him, and on these other days, then they're at this practice or that practice." And like, she just kind of laid out their whole schedule for me, and I thought, "This is different. This sounds kind of cool. Mm-hmm. This sounds like..." And I remember watching the two of them together, the husband and the wife, and how when they were talking to each other. And when they were talking, they weren't only talking about the children. They were talking about their lives and about each other and about sometimes about the things at work and sometimes about the children. But it was like they were steadily building their relationship. And I remember just thinking that that was so cool. And I remember going to church in this ward and seeing the kind of negative pressure that they got, because, you know, they weren't doing it right. They weren't fulfilling the roles in the proper way. And I thought, but have you seen how their family works? They are doing really awesome stuff. Mm-hmm. So like when I think about, is there a role model that I've seen? I think that's probably the strongest one that comes to mind, where they were having this real relationship where their home was balanced between them, their work was balanced between them, their children were balanced between them, and their dreams and desires were balanced between them. Because I guess very often when I look at the idea of motherhood, it's basically that you come last. Mm-hmm. Seems to be kind of part of what motherhood means in a way, which probably leads right into, what are our fears about motherhood?
Yeah, I definitely have fears about having to maybe give up too much of myself, not just in terms of career, but I'm very, I think I mentioned, I'm really introverted and I like to spend a lot of time in my own head. Maybe that's selfish, I don't know, but I tend to do a lot of sort of thinking, and I like peace and quiet, and sometimes I can get really anxious when there's a lot of like noise and light and sort of chaos. I just don't deal well with sensory input, I guess, when it overloads. And so I sort of worry that having kids, you know, running around making noise might cause me to get really anxious and I won't be patient enough. And that if I'm not getting a lot of sort of alone time, me time, that might be really troubling for me and I might not be very happy.
I definitely relate right to that, Amy. I've had some of those same fears. Yeah. Of would I stop being me?
Yeah.
You know, if I became a mom, would I not be me anymore?
I'm just, you know, worried about the stress that comes with parenting and the chaos. You know, I think we've all seen that mother who is just surrounded by kids screaming and jumping and thinking like, oh my goodness, I don't want that chaos. And in my life, especially since it's been, you know, yourself for your whole adult life, being able to do what you want, you know, get up when you want, go to bed when you want, for the most part. Sometimes you have job or school, but when you have kids, you are supposed to put them first, and I believe that's true. You should put your kids first and make a balance, like Sybil described. But you know, am I going to be able to put my kids first? Am I, you know, and just the pressure of like, because I've had so many years to imagine it, and I just have this image of like, I'm going to do everything right. Cause you know, I mean, I don't know if you observe other parents and think about like, oh, well that looks like chaos. I'm not going to do it that way. And just thinking like, I probably don't know what I'm talking about or what I'm getting myself into. Like, you know, it's probably chaos because after, you know, after a week of it, you can probably manage it, but after, you know, a year of the chaos, you kind of give into it, you get beat down as a parent. I don't know.
And I've also been afraid of like, you know, what if I'm no good as a mom? What if I'm a terrible mother? I don't know. Like sometimes I'm afraid of the kind of world that I would bring children into, where it's becoming increasingly plugged in, where, you know, children younger and younger and younger are more and more spending time with their screens. You know, they've got their cell phones and they've got their iPads and they've got their, I don't know, just all the million ways that children are plugged in now. If I were to have children, I would want them outside enjoying the beauty of nature instead of plugged in on a screen doing whatever. No matter how many cool things you can do online, you know, like there's a world outside that you can access just by walking out the door. And like the other day, I was going to the library and I was bringing some materials back, and there was a car parked in front of the library that was idling. And as I walked past the car, I saw that there were two young teen girls. They were probably, I don't know, 13 and 15 or something. And they were both just sitting there in the car playing with their cell phones. And their mom was in the library checking out books or whatever to bring home, whatever it was she was getting. But they couldn't be bothered to get up and participate in life because they were busy on their screens, you know. And I've seen this getting younger and younger, where there was a little boy riding his bicycle past our house while he was texting on his cell phone. And he was, you know, maybe 10, you know, he was just a little guy. And so seeing the kind of world that's evolving to where schools are becoming increasingly unsafe, I guess. Like there's a lot of violence and drugs and abusive type things that are going on in schools. And then combine that with the plugged in nature of society and with the, I don't know, I tend to sometimes take a look at it and say, what would I be able to do if I were to bring children into this world to give them a good life where they would be both socially adjusted and actually be able to go and enjoy life? Like, is that becoming possible anymore? Mm-hmm. Seems like the whole child question is becoming more complicated with every day that goes by. And I don't know if I could rise to the occasion. Mm-hmm. And would it ruin my relationship with my husband? Would we lose the beautiful equality we've worked for? Like,
oh,
am I starting to sound just terribly paranoid?
The point you made about ruining the relationship with your husband is a good one. I often think about that too. That is something. The times that I have had my nieces and nephews come and stay with us overnight or for whatever, I just get so frustrated and so frazzled. I'm just like, take them, get them out of the room. And I feel like, you know, I could be more angry and agitated with children and it might hurt the relationship.
I feel like I like dumped this huge piece of paranoia out here. Do you ever think about the whole, would you send them to the public schools? And I don't know, do you ever think about these things, or am I like an overthinker to the extreme?
I think about those things a lot, actually. That's normal. If you and I are normal, then that's normal. I worry a lot about that. And I spent a lot of time outside when I was a kid, and I would love to provide that for children. And I don't want to be like the mom that won't get their kid the Xbox. Like, that's mean, but I don't know if they thank you in the long run or not for not having them sitting in front of a TV all day. But I definitely, think about that. And then quality of education, and can I afford to put them in private schools if the public schools aren't very good where I live? And in some of the high schools, it's getting so competitive. And I talk to some of my girlfriends who have younger kids, and they're doing homework at such an early age. And I can't believe that second graders have homework, and like hours and hours of homework. And I don't remember having that much homework at that age. And just thinking, like, children are being robbed of their childhood. And I wouldn't want my children to have that, but I also want them to be, you know, I'd want them to be able to compete, you know, academically, so they're not behind when they get older. And I don't know how you balance that sort of safeguarding. It just seems like it's much safer, much harder to safeguard your, you know, a child's childhood as a parent these days.
Definitely. Like, they don't even get to be kids anymore.
Yeah.
They're being groomed for all of their future instead of living their present.
Do you feel when you talk about these things hypothetically about education or parenting styles that parents feel like your opinion doesn't matter? Because I feel like, you know, I've talked about these things like charter schools versus public schools versus private schools, and there's kind of like, well, you're not even a parent. Like, maybe that's just me, you know, being sensitive, but feeling like, your opinion about these things doesn't matter because you don't have kids, you know? What do you know about whether this parenting style is effective or too harsh or something like that? Have you ever experienced that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, I've definitely tried to put in my two bits. Like, okay, so we were talking earlier about when you're in a conversation with a bunch of moms and mm-hmm. you try to participate and mm-hmm. how it doesn't go very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I remember offering some opinions about education because I've thought about it a lot. But when I bring out my ideas and say, well, you know, I was thinking something along these lines, they're like, well, your ideas don't count.
Exactly.
You don't have any kids. And I'm like, well, okay.
Whenever you're talking about what's good for kids or, you know, what makes a good childhood, they're kind of like, well, how would you know? You know, you're not doing it. Like, you'll change your mind. You'll see how hard it is when you have kids. You'll see how hard it is to resist their demands for candy or something like that. Or, you know,
yeah.
Their constant whining. You'll see how hard it is and you'll give in to that sort of thing.
Yeah, they can't discuss the ideas without feeling like we're judging their parenthood, even though that's not what we're thinking about. We're thinking about the ideas, right?
Exactly,
and if we had kids, then we would be, entitled to share our ideas?
Yeah, because then it'd be okay to talk about it. I'm sorry, that's kind of what it reminded me of when you were talking about, you know, at schooling and stuff like that, because I've had that experience where it's kind of like, well, what would you know about anything?
Especially in the Mormon culture, they often have a hard time seeing us as valid mm-hmm. because we're not hitting the same milestones that they're expecting us to hit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they don't know what to think of us. I've had this come up on my husband's side of the family that they sometimes don't know what to think of me because I have no children. And they like me and they think I'm an interesting person. But sometimes they're just kind of like, you know, what are you doing with your life? Why don't you have children yet? And sometimes trying to interact with them just as a family member can feel really strange because I haven't hit the checkpoints that they're waiting for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can definitely relate to that. Feeling like, you know, my in-laws are not interested in our life because we're not doing, you know, sometimes, and it's a little harsh, but sometimes I feel like if we're not going on a mission, getting married, or having a baby, there's no interest in our life at all. It's just, let's be excited about the next big thing, you know, and it's usually a marriage or a baby or a mission. And if you're not doing any of those things, then you're not really contributing to the family. And so, yeah, definitely feeling like you get your value from hitting those milestones.
Instead of being able to say there is value and meaning to my life because I am a person, mm-hmm. I am doing worthwhile things, but they don't necessarily see that as worthwhile. And that can be thwarting.
I've had that experience with my in-laws and especially the extended family and my husband's extended family, and like we'll go to family events and, you know, they'll ask him all about his career and his education and what he's doing, and they won't even make eye contact with me, and I'm like standing right next to him, but it's like I'm not even there. And that's so frustrating to me because it's just not like that in like my world. Like outside of people I know from church, people seem to be really interested in what I'm doing. You know, I'm doing something sort of similar to what he's doing, so I don't think it's any less interesting. But yeah, no one wants to hear it, you know, sort of in his family. And I think my family is better at showing interest in me, but I guess because I'm not their family, they don't know me. And I don't know, I kind of feel like his family hasn't really made any effort to get to know me because mm-hmm. they've just sort of written me off
mm-hmm.
because I'm, you know, just weird thing they can't understand.
So here's a really weird question then. So do you think that if you were to either become pregnant or to announce to them that you were infertile, would that change their interest level in you?
I don't know. There's a lot of other tension having to do with me not, you know, because we're not in church anymore too. So I don't know how much of it is sort of them not relating to me because I'm not, you know, sort of hitting the milestones, and how much is because I'm not going to church and, you know, my husband's not going to church. But there's a lot of sort of hurt feelings in the past and things. And I don't know if those would just vanish instantly if we were having a baby. But I think certainly they would have more interest in talking to me, maybe, But I also sort of wonder if maybe they'd just still be looking past me. They'd just be looking at the baby, you know, if it would still be like Alan gets attention and, you know, the baby gets attention and I'm still just sort of standing there feeling awkward.
Sybil, you don't know how many times I've thought about that. And I do think that I would get more attention if I got pregnant or if I said I was infertile. I think I would get sympathy, which I would resent because I don't really, like, this is kind of a touchy subject, but I know there's a lot of women out there who feel like a lot of remorse and sadness about being infertile. But because I was adopted, I don't think I would be very that sad about it. And I really resent feeling like I get my worth from my biology, you know, from what my body can do. But yeah, I do think it would change the dynamics, but I would feel resentful. Like, you know, I'm still who I am. It's not about what I can give you. It's not about what I'll give you in terms of grandchildren or nieces and nephews. Like, you should want to know me as a person.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel sometimes, that my value in the family is about what I can give to them, you know, because grandchildren are so important and there's so much excitement surrounding it. And if I'm not doing that, then what's the point? Why am I here? Kind of thing.
Exactly. With the infertility thing, do we ever feel guilty for choosing not to have children when maybe there's even people that we know who are infertile, who are, I don't know, spending gobs and gobs of money trying to get pregnant or trying to adopt?
I don't feel like my life has anything to do with another person's, you know, struggles and what they want to do with their life. They can choose, you know, that a child is important for their life, but, you know, and I want it to be okay with my family if not having children ever is what we decide to do. Like, I want to know that that's okay, and I don't feel like it is. But, yeah, I don't think that, you know, my decision to have children or not to have children has anything to do with another person's choice to have children or their struggle with fertility.
And that makes really good logical sense. The emotional sense doesn't always come through as nicely.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like women who have kids and then complain about them, I think would probably be more harmful to women who really want them and can't have them. Like, you have these beautiful children and...
Yeah, how many Facebook statuses have I seen? My children are driving me crazy.
Yeah.
That is interesting because you're right. Like, some people would say, well, we're so selfish for not having children when there are those who can't have children. It's like, well, what about those who have children and then neglect them?
Yeah, because, I mean, there are a lot of, I think, people who would be reading these status updates and thinking, like, oh, I, you know, I wish I had a baby to throw up all over me or whatever.
But I don't think I've ever put a status update that says, choosing yet again to remain childless.
Right. You asked me about, you know, how my family, I think, would react if I became pregnant or announced that I was infertile. And I sort of touched on what, I mean, I don't really know, but what would happen if I became pregnant. But I have like a really like a fear that if I try to have babies later and find out that I can't, then there's going to be like a ton of blame, like, oh, it's all your fault. And if you'd done it earlier, you could have had kids and, you know, like just not a lot of sympathy because it's my fault or something. And
no, I totally get what you're saying. That whole thing of choosing not to have children when, you know, you first get married and you're really young. And then a few years later, if you decide to, and then there's problems that they'll be like, well, no sympathy for you. You know, like you don't deserve any sympathy because you could have had our sympathy if you had tried quickly. But since you took your time trying, then no sympathy because, boy, that just kind of makes me feel grouchy.
And it might not have anything to do with your age. And, you know, maybe there's no way of knowing, but I think that the tendency might be to just assume that it is because, you know, you put it off or something.
Yeah, and just shift the blame.
Yeah. So I kind of feel like if it came to that point, I wouldn't talk to anyone about it. And then I would have, like, no support network. And that would be really kind of rough, I think.
That would be. Totally. Amy, if that happens, call me and I'll be part of your support.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, okay, so do we want to talk about how we remain childless? What kind of birth control options and so forth?
When I first got married, I did the shot, I knew I did not want to get, you know, pregnant as a 19-year-old. I thought that would be horrible. So I did that, but it had some very bad side effects. I just decided that hormonal birth control was not a good fit. So we've just been using condoms, and it's been working. And, you know, and that's also the kind of thing that, you know, if we did get pregnant, at least I used to think this way when I was younger, and now I'm using birth control, but if Heavenly Father really wants me to get pregnant, you know, birth control doesn't always work, and then that's a message, and I'll be fine with it, and I'll just have to go with it. So, and I'll be, you know, that's a sign, but it's kind of funny to think about, but that's how I used to think, like, you know, if I was really meant to be, he could, you know, Heavenly Father would make me pregnant, and, you know, and I would be a mom, but I'm just gonna take the precautions and live my life the way I want to live, and you know, that's how I'm gonna do it, and we'll see what happens. So now we, you know, we use condoms and try to do the rhythm method a little bit, like, you know, and stuff like that, but that's what we've been doing. It's been working.
Yeah, I've had the exact, like, sort of opposite when I was engaged and I first went on the pill when I was younger, and when I'm off the pill, my periods are incredibly painful, and I, you know, really heavy, and I get really debilitating migraines. And so birth control is like a lifesend, because it just makes all of that so much easier. And the migraines in particular are less frequent and less severe. And so I felt like, I mean, in high school I would miss a lot of school because of these migraines, and now, you know, I don't have to have them. And so that's actually something I sort of like, I dread being off the pill in order to get pregnant. And that's not fun. But I look at that. And so anyway, I've pretty much just done the birth control and then in the pill. And then in times when I've been off of it for one reason or another, we've used condoms as well.
Yeah, we've done, I don't know, we've done kind of a combination of different things. And we're actually reassessing different birth control options right now. So I don't know how much I have to say, because we're in an in-between spot and you've covered the other stuff we've done. So, but it is interesting. And being kind of in tune with your body, like the whole rhythm method type thing, that's interesting to be paying attention to the cycles of the body. And I did get kind of a kick out of you saying earlier, Amy, about, you know, using the rhythm method and then using it to, you know, like you're trying to have a baby, but really you're using it to make sure that you don't.
Yeah.
Are we trying or not?
Yeah. In theory, I started, you know, keeping track of all that to sort of keep track of when my cycles would sort of re-regulate after coming off the pill. I had, you know, big tables, lots of Excel spreadsheets, keeping track of every possible little symptom and temperature and weight fluctuation and cyclic acne and everything. It was crazy. And then I was doing all this work and then using that to just sort of avoid my husband certain days.
So the last thing that I wanted to talk about is options to having children. Because, you know, sometimes it's like, well, you either have children or you don't have children. But I think that there are a lot of other ways that we can participate in that aspect of life without bearing children. And I wanted to bring some of those to the discussion here at the end. And I'll start off with the one that I've seen the most in my life, which is being an aunt. So I have a lot of nieces and nephews that are part of large Mormon families, because their moms and dads are being very diligent about having children and loving the Mormon narrative, right? And so whenever I get together with these nieces and nephews, they want eye contact really desperately. Like they'll sit, like if they're young enough, they'll sit right in my lap and they'll just hold on to me and want to play and play and play, or read stories, or tell me everything in their heads, or sing me songs, or all kinds of things. And if they're too old to sit in my lap, like I have a niece who's, I think she's 12, and she'll sit like right next to me and she'll just look right in my eyes and she'll just talk a blue streak for like 2 hours and tell me everything that's going on at school and everything she's thinking about, and sing me little songs she's thought of, and tell me about stories she's thinking about, and tell me about how things are going with her mom and her dad and her sisters and her brothers. And like, she'll just go, 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 go. And I'll just look in her eyes and I'll say, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'll just, you know, I'll just be there. And I'm amazed every time that I have these interactions with my nieces and nephews at how desperately they want an adult to focus in on them as though they are the only person on earth. They just want it because they're in these big families. And I grew up in a big family. I know what it's like not to be seen as yourself, but to be seen as one of the children, you know, part of a group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, and my husband too, he loves to play with the children, and he plays with them as an adult who has the time to stop and play with the children instead of as the worn out parent. And so we are like the favored aunt and uncle to our nieces and nephews because we always have the time to sit and listen to them and talk with them and play with them and nurture their dreams and hear their secrets sometimes when they have to talk to an adult, but they just can't talk to mom and dad. I think we all remember times like that in our lives where you just needed to tell someone that you trusted, but maybe mom or dad wasn't quite the right choice at the moment for whatever reason. I don't know. Like, yeah. It's a very particular role, and it's one that I find I love. I love being a good aunt to my nieces and nephews. It means a lot to me. And if I had my own children, I would not be able to do that in the same way because my energies would be taken with those children that belong to me instead of being able to give those energies to these other children. So there's one of my things that I really think that is a very valuable and valid way to participate with children that I think is needed very much, but I don't think it's recognized.
Mm-hmm. I love being an aunt. I definitely can relate to that.
Yeah, I love being an aunt. I live very far away from all of my nieces and nephews, so that's sort of sad. I wish I could be more involved. That sounds really beautiful.
I kind of have a funny story about being an aunt. You know, whenever my sister would have a new baby, we would go back to my family ward for the baby blessings, and I almost always would get a congratulations from somebody in the ward who hadn't seen me in a few years, thinking that it was my baby that was being blessed because they weren't paying attention or something. I'd be like, oh, congrats. I'm like, oh, thank you. It's my niece. Yeah, the same thing happens with, you know, because I love my nieces and nephews, and I will, you know, often put them in my Facebook picture or something like that, and because they're very important to me, and people will sometimes think that they're my kids if they haven't talked to me in a while, and that can be awkward. I don't know if you've had that experience.
Yeah, I've definitely had that experience. my younger brother had his daughter when he was really quite young, and he's about a year and a half younger than I am, and so I was only like, I guess I was about 23 or so when she was born, and I was like, when I would come home to visit, I would be nervous about sort of holding her in the grocery store because I knew I'd run into someone from high school or something. I was like, I don't want to have everyone like saying, oh yeah, I saw Amy, she had a baby, and like word getting around that I had a baby that I didn't have. But that's yeah. Sort of an awkward situation. But then, like, you know, it's like, is she yours? And I was like, yes, she is mine. She's my niece, and I like her a lot, you know.
Oh, I really like that, Amy. Yes, she is mine. She's my niece. I like that.
Yeah.
Next time I get asked, I'm going to say that.
Yeah. Well, it felt weird saying, no, she's not mine, because, you know,
yeah.
It's not like she's a stranger's child I just picked up. But she's there's an important relationship there that I feel like giving voice to, I guess.
You know, that idea of running into people, like when I've gone home to visit my family and I go to the grocery store or something, I will inevitably run into somebody from high school. And the question they usually ask is, so how many kids do you have? It's not even, you know, do you have any kids? It's like, how many?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Where are your little ones? I love that one.
So what are some of the other options?
Yeah.
Shelby, you were going to say.
Yeah. I was adopted, and my older siblings were in the foster care system. So I'm very sensitive to that issue. And I realize that there are a lot of children in the system that need homes, that are temporary homes, where you provide that family atmosphere, but you're not their parent forever, and you're a very important role to that child, but you have legal responsibilities, but not long-term. And that's something that my husband and I have been wanting to do, just because of my history being in foster care until I was two, and then my siblings, and hearing the horror stories. And I think that's a good option for people who are older and have a career and are established, as a way to do some parenting without being, you know, having a biological child, or adoption, of course. But that is your child, so you are having a child. But also volunteering or mentoring or tutoring, you know, those are ways that you can be nurturing, I guess, and that are not, you know, the traditional mother father roles. And there's also something that I've looked into, that's a refugee foster care, where children that are in like a war conflict, a high conflict area of the world, you can foster more of a long term, but they're not available for adoption. And it's like a good way to help a kid in need. So, I mean, there are ways if couples want to, but they're not comfortable with having their own child. Because I've heard of some people who, you know, we haven't really talked about this, but I know of one couple who they have a medical issue and they're a very serious medical, either mental health or some kind of genetic disease, and they do not feel like they want to have a child and bring a child into that world because it's something they know about. And those are things that the foster care, the refugee foster care, things that they were looking into as a way to you know, parent and help out with society and children, but they do not feel like they're able to have a child. And I wouldn't say that, you know, you have to have a child or even, you know, do anything long term, but they're definitely roles and ways that you can be fulfilled and engage with children in a meaningful way.
Mm. So they didn't want to have children so that they wouldn't pass down.
Yeah, pass down
the genetic
okay. disease or.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that some people don't think about, as to why perhaps someone would be choosing not to have a kid, is like, oh, well, we know that we have a high percentage, you know, possibility of our child having this really, you know, awful disease that I've dealt with, or that, you know, my sibling has dealt with, or something like that. And they just don't feel like it would be fair to that child to bring it into the world. So they would choose adoption or something like that.
And it is interesting to stop and think about how many children are currently on the planet who need extra nurturing, extra care, mm-hmm. extra parenting.
And as an adopted person, I'm always, like, I was always sensitive to this, what have we been calling it? The script that the church has, that this is the right way to have a family. You get married young and you have your kids. And I was like, my family doesn't look like that. My family, you know, is a real legitimate family and it doesn't follow this pattern. And, you know, maybe there's other ways to have a family, you know, and it's also legitimate. And, you know, I was very plugged into the adoption world, you know, the adoption community, and their family was just fine. Their family was normal. And I'm like, this family, she didn't have her children until she was, you know, in her 40s, and her family is normal. So what if I wait until I'm 30 or 40? You know, I don't see it affecting the actual family once it begins. You know, like, why, what advantage does the mother who is 21 and, you know, have to the mother who is 40, or, you know, between 30 and 40? I didn't see one. I didn't see one at all. So I was like, why should there be a rush? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Did I explain that? I mean, I'm trying not to be offensive.
Yeah. Having a greater understanding of what a valid family can look like that all the different families are valid instead of just the ones that fit the mm-hmm. nice, tidy story, mm-hmm. you know?
You know, and my parents had like 6 years together before they had kids, and, you know, it didn't mean that the family was you know, horrible or like hurt in any way. So why, where's the rush, you know?
Yeah, why is there such a rush?
Yeah, I always felt like they didn't really, I was, you know, there's this message, get married, have babies, don't put it off. But then there's never an explanation of why, or if there was, I missed it. I don't know what the rush was.
That's the only explanation that I had, but it seems like the blessings are greater if you plan it out and do it in a way that makes sense for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My observation anyway.
Any other options that we want to bring out?
Pets. That's not a great option, I guess, but I just got a puppy, so that's sort of on my mind.
We have a dog too, and I remember a general conference talk where one of the apostles was on an airplane talking to a couple and about their family, and they're like, oh, well, we have a dog, and he was like mocking them. I remember when we bought our dog, I was like, is anybody going to think that about us? I don't know if you remember that story, but I remember it because it's kind of like disparaging of people who chose to have a dog instead of kids or something like that, which I don't think when you get a pet, you're choosing it over kids. They're not comparable, but you know, sometimes people think that.
I was surprised just how much we felt like we feel like a little family. Now we have this little puppy to take care of. It just feels, you know, it's like our relationship's a little different, and it's nice. I was surprised by it. And I'm not saying it's the same as having a kid, of course, but having a baby or a child, but it's nice. It's something.
Brings you joy and happiness.
Yeah.
Well, and there's supposed to be all those amazing health benefits that come with loving a pet, you know, like it's supposed to do all kinds of great stuff. So yeah, let's end with just talking about a little bit more about why we have specifically chosen not to have children at this point in our lives.
The biggest thing for me is I don't feel ready, and I feel like that should be a good excuse. And I don't feel like I should be forced to or pressured to do something that is that life-changing to make anybody happy, you know, or to appease the cultural norms. I think that'd be a very shallow reason. And I think of myself as kind of a late bloomer that, you know, I want to meet my goals, live the life that I want to before it's time to bring in a life and start, you know, teaching them how they need to live their life and meet their goals.
I guess for me, probably, it's complicated. There's a lot of reasons that I don't have children right now, but I think it would probably boil down to it doesn't feel like what I'm supposed to be doing. I think because there are things that I have felt I should do in my life. There are definitely things. And when those happen, I go after them because I feel that compelling desire in my soul. And I have felt kind of the opposite with children. As a sort of a comparison, I didn't feel that I wanted to marry. And I didn't, and I didn't, and I didn't. And then when I finally did, it wasn't because I had changed my mind that marriage was suddenly a wonderful thing. It was because I had decided that this one particular person on the entire planet was a good person for me to spend the rest of my life with. Like it was compelling because of that specific life space that I was in with him, with my husband. And so I see how that could shift and change when the circumstances shift and change, that suddenly it could become a compelling thing, that is what I want to put my energies toward. How do I say it simply? It doesn't feel like the right time. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like, well, given another year or two, it feels like it may never be the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And culturally, that feels anathema. You know, it's a bad thing. It's given me two black eyes kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But for myself as a person, I can't deny that that's how it feels in the core of my being, is not now. And not even not yet, just not now. And the now is the now I'm living in. So I don't know if that will change.
I like that because I think my answer would be very complicated. Like you said, it's complicated. I could probably list 10 reasons why I don't have children right now. It does sort of all boil down to it just hasn't been my time, and it hasn't been compelling enough for me to do it. And yeah, I might change my mind later. I might, or I might not, and I don't know. But so it isn't so much a matter of yet for me either, but just not now. So I like that. It's good.
I was just saying, notice nobody said because we're selfish and we, you know, want to party.
Right.
Well, I'm selfish and I want to party. No. If by party we mean like study a lot and be sort of boring. Yeah. I was going to say, I think that's why I like Sybil's answer, because I don't have to admit all the reasons that other people, that would open it up for other people to say, well, that's selfish, that's selfish, that's selfish. You know, like it's just not the right time for me. And like, I think that's a great answer, because how do you, it sort of shuts down the conversation and no one can really then question you further from that. Maybe. Right. Hopefully they wouldn't.
Right. They can pick apart every other reason that you give them.
But
Yeah,
if you say, oh, you know, I don't have children yet because I've been in school, then they'll say, like, well, you can have children and have in school and be in school. And then they'll provide 10 examples of people they know who had children while they were in graduate school. And so, yeah.
And because these people made that choice, obviously you should too.
Right, right. Or because it's possible for them, it's also possible for me. And, you know.
Well, and the question isn't always, is it possible? The question is it a good idea? I mean,
is it going to work for you?
Is it going to work for you? Yeah. Is it the right thing for you to be doing with your energies and your life right now? Because I love what you said earlier, Amy, about how this is your life. You don't get to go and sign up for a bunch of others. I mean, maybe we reincarnate. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think it's all pretty much a mystery after we die. But, you know, there's lots of ideas out there. But really, right now, we know this is the life that we have to live, that I am inhaling and I'm exhaling right now. This is my life in these seconds that are ticking right now. What am I going to do with it, instead of how am I going to give this away to other people, or how am I going to negate myself?
And
how am I going to sacrifice
who
I am? Is this going to make me happy? Is this going to fulfill my amazing human soul? Because, I mean, the aspiration of the human being is amazing. And what is it that will fulfill that? If we really tune into that, what is it that we choose to do? And that's why I wanted to call this particular panel Childless by Choice, because it's something that we're choosing with awareness. And it's not that we will never choose differently, but it's that we are choosing.
You know, saying, you know, this isn't what's right for me, and living in the moment and saying this is the choice that's right for me for now, I think that sometimes it would be helpful for me to remember that when I'm sort of worrying too much about, am I going to do this? Am I not going to do this? When will I do this? And what if when I decide to do this, I can't do this? Or, you know, all of the sort of like freaking out about, will I put them in, you know, this school or that school? And just sort of, I just need to sort of, I think, step back sometimes and say, right now, you don't have them. Right now, you don't feel like you need them, or you don't, it doesn't feel right to you right now, or whatever. And maybe that would, if I could do that more often, maybe I wouldn't have so much angst about the whole topic.
That was really good, Amy. I echo that angst feeling and wanting to remember, okay, I don't need to stress about the in the future right now, because I'm living in this present. This has really been just a fascinating discussion. And I feel, I can tell, I'm probably responding to just my own cultural upbringing, but for those that are listening to this, if you feel that we're trying to say that motherhood or having children is a bad idea, please know that's not what we're saying. We're talking about our own complexity as women who have chosen at this point in our lives not to have children. And it is something that is very difficult to talk about, because we are living in a culture, especially with our Mormon heritage, that doesn't recognize that as a valid choice. And so we haven't got any way to talk about it. And the rhetoric that we have heard about women who choose not to have children has been largely negative, and we feel, I think, largely positive about ourselves as people. And so if this podcast has come across in any way as offensive, please know that that's not the intent that it was given with. Mm-hmm. We're trying to discuss and think out something that's very complicated for us.
And motherhood is, you know, you can talk about that very freely at church, but it's taboo to talk about, you know, not having children. And this is a place where we can talk about it. And I don't know if it's come across, but it's an extremely painful topic for myself. And I've been trying to, you know, keep it together because I'm talking on this, you know, podcast, but it's a very touchy subject. And normally I would be very hesitant to talk about it to people just on the street who come up to me. I usually am hostile if they ask me about it. But I don't know if the pain and the angst has come across, and I just wanted to put that out there.
That's good. Yeah, there are more of us out there who have chosen not to have children, and I know that it is a very isolating place to be at times, that it feels that we can't talk about our choices and our thoughts without being very quickly and fairly harshly judged. Mm-hmm. And also that when we do try to participate in conversations with women who have children, that sometimes we're not seen as valid people as well. And that, of course, doesn't help.
and also that it's a touchy subject for everyone, women who have children too, because I feel like, you know, I'm tiptoeing around other women when I sort of express my points of view, because I don't want anyone to feel like I'm judging them or making light of their choices, or that I are invalidating their decisions.
Or that we think
so
less.
It's really hard. Right. Yeah.
Or that we think that they're not, you know, educated or something like that. I know that some women feel very defensive about that, and that's not what it is. It's about being able to make a choice, and I think Sybil has kind of outlined that very well. A choice that's right for you and your family and your life.
When you choose children, it's a choice that you can't really unchoose. Like, you can change careers, you can change religions, you can change, you know, you can quit things, but you can't quit kids once you've got them.
You can even change husbands or wives, but you can't.
That's true. Yeah, you can. Children. You can even divorce. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can't unchild. When those with children speak of the profoundness of the children in their lives, it's complicated for them the same way that us choosing not to have children in our lives is complicated for us, because there's so much at play there, because mm-hmm. we are without and they are with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet at the same time, we are with and they are without, mm-hmm. because we are with the opportunity to choose anything and they are without that opportunity because they've chosen the, mm-hmm. ooh, see, this is so hard to say because it feels like no matter which way I say it, mm-hmm. I'm gonna hurt somebody, and that's why I think it's almost untalkable, and so it divides us. When I think we could gain a lot more from each other if we could speak across those spaces.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I'm sort of concerned about what's gonna go on in the comments after.
I think we're all feeling
like I hope
that.
Anything that's never...
Yeah. Yeah. This is vulnerable, I think. And now we're all, now that we're here at the very end, we're about
I'm
to
scared.
Wrap. We really want to do this. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, thanks for having this very vulnerable and fascinating conversation with me, Shelby and Amy. This has been so good.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for listening to Daughters of Mormonism. I invite you to respond at daughtersofmormonism.blogspot.com. Special thanks to Sarah for editing this episode, and thanks to Kevin McLeod for the music.